Hey guys, and welcome to episode 149 of the OCDStories.com podcast. So in this episode, I interviewed Alvis Gomez. Alvis was on episode 15 of the podcast, so, you know, well over 2 years ago now. So it was great to get him on to catch up on his story. And also he gives, so if you haven't listened to episode 15, he kind of gives a recap of his story for those that haven't listened to the episode. But for those that have listened to it, he also updates it. So it's good to see how he's doing. In his story, he does mention a few sexually graphical intrusive thoughts. So if you are listening with children, I will trust your parental judgment on what you decide to do with this information. But I just thought I'd give you a heads up. And then I wanted to get him on because he's now a PhD student, and he's a PhD student studying linguistics here in London. And his research is around understanding experiences of obsessive compulsive disorder related to sexuality, gender, and relationships. And I won't kind of describe what it is here. I'll let him do it because he obviously knows it far better than I. But on top of that, we talk about how you guys can get involved if you wish to help him with his research. And then we talked about, he did a talk at another university here in the UK called the 11 Misunderstandings of Homosexual Themed OCD. And it was great to him debunk some of those, because it's important to do that, because then, you know, it stops the media grabbing hold of those themes and kind of not doing a good job with them. So he debunked that to stop that happening. It was interesting to hear him. And maybe if you've been told some of these, you can use his answers to kind of combat back and give a more researched response to those people who aren't quite informed on the topic. And then we talk about, he just gives his general advice for people with OCD. It was a really nice message. And then he talks about finding a qualified therapist and the importance of not trusting some people who promote themselves online who aren't trained as clinicians but say they treat OCD. So he talks about the importance of that. And then the general questions like the 20-year-old self. So really great to get him on and chat with him again. And hopefully you guys will enjoy it. And if you're interested, please do take part in his research. And so as always, thank you for listening. I deeply appreciate you, and I hope the podcast is helping. And if it has helped and you get a moment, please leave a review on whatever podcast you listen to it on, because it helps me reach more people and strokes my ego, of course. So thank you for that. And without further ado, here is Alvis. In today's episode, I have Alvis Gomez. He was on episode 15, where he shared his OCD story and talked about his experience on the TV show Switzerland's Got Talent. He is now studying for his PhD at Queen Mary University of London. Welcome to the show, Alvis.
Hi, Stu.
It's good to have you on. And obviously, that was, we were discussing before, it's over 2 years ago since you were first on. You were living in Switzerland at the time. You're now obviously in London. Very near me, at my old university as well. It's where I did my master's. And I just thought it'd be good, so anyone who listened to that first episode, it'd be good to get an update on your story, you know, what's happened since, you know, 2 and a bit years ago. And I guess maybe for those that haven't listened to that yet, although I encourage them to go listen to episode 15, is maybe just give them a couple minute summary of that kind of initial story and then spend the time updating everyone.
Okay. So basically my story starts in February 2012, where I suddenly started to have anxieties about, you know, the possibility of being gay. So like my main theme was about my sexuality. I constantly obsessed about the possibility of being gay. Back then I also didn't have much experience in terms of, you know, relationships and sexual experience. So I was very naive back then in terms of the world and that kind of thing. But basically, yeah, so I had my first sexual experience during the time that I had OCD. It wasn't very good. I wasn't able to perform, which then reinforced the OCD. And then the woman back then, she joked, "Oh, maybe you're gay," you know, which kind of made it worse. And then she also suggested I should go for a therapist. That's what I did. The therapist, he never heard about an OCD related to sexuality. He said that I was on a quest of masculinity, whatever that means. Eventually, I mean, he kind of helped me with the relationship that I had with my family, because there are some troubling aspects on that. And then, well, while I was seeing that therapist, there was a time where I spent 2 weeks at home. I was living by myself. So I didn't go out for 2 weeks, and I almost killed myself because the obsessions were just never ending. Yeah. So I was really like, I had the knife in my hand and I was ready to cut my wrists. And then somehow, you know, you just have this thought about your family being very sad of your death and your friends. And then I thought, well, if there are gay people who are actually happy and they came out to their family and friends and they're happy, then I can probably also do this. So I thought, well, if I come out as gay, the anxiety and the obsessions would stop. So I did a coming out to my family and to my friends. They were very, very surprised by that. Also very accepting of the whole thing, which for me was a relief. But the obsessions and the anxiety didn't go away at all. Like it seemed that it even made it worse. And that's when I realized, okay, so that it is OCD. Yeah. Because I've been reading about it online, and it just seemed to me that what I was feeling back then corresponded to the symptoms that the articles mentioned and so forth. And then in August 2012, I went to America for a year abroad at the University of Montana. And basically, I found a therapist over there who completely understood my experience as OCD. I didn't do CBT with him. Because he thought that CBT in the long run didn't have deep effects. So basically what he did was rebuilding my self-confidence, because I wasn't very self-confident back then. I didn't know why I was studying English literature and film. I wasn't able to have a relationship with girls. So he thought, well, maybe if we could build up that aspect of myself, then the anxiety and the thoughts would disappear. He helped me indeed very much. I went back home to Switzerland and I actually did my own exposures. So whenever I would have a thought, I would just stop arguing with it and kind of fantasizing the thought to its end. Like, yeah. If the thought would be, oh, you want to suck his dick, then I will be like, oh yeah, I want to suck his dick, and I also want to fuck him in the ass, and, you know, all having these all very visual images of having sex with another guy. At the very beginning, it was very, very anxiety provoking to do that. But then with time, I realized that I would have like a certain time without having obsessions. So at the very beginning, these were like 5 minutes. And then after 5 minutes, I will be like, oh, I haven't thought about it for 5 minutes. And then, you know, the thought comes back again. So those little spaces, time spans without obsessions, they would increase with time. So I went from 5 minutes to an hour, to a day, to a week, to a month, and eventually even to a year without having any anxiety, obsessions, compulsions, just being completely OCD free. Then in 2015, I went on Switzerland's Got Talent with a song about OCD. And when the TV show was broadcast, I got a lot of feedback from people who suffered from OCD. And then I did a crowdfunding where I collected around £12,000 in 45 days. I used the money to record the song that I played on television. I also did a video clip of that song that is now available online on YouTube. If you type in "Let Me Go," OCD "Let Me Go," Elvis Gomez, you will find it easily. And then in 2016, I finished my MA, my master's at the University of Lausanne in Switzerland. And for my MA dissertation, I actually looked at how heterosexual men who had a sexual orientation OCD used language in online forums. And my supervisor back then, she said, "Listen, I mean, there's no research about this. It's really new. Usually OCD is studied from a psychological, psychiatric point of view, and you're coming in with these linguistic tools. Why don't you do a PhD?" And it is really funny because the first person who ever mentioned this to me, like this idea of doing a PhD, was my American therapist. It is such a strange coincidence because he often would tell me, like, "I wonder where you are going to be in 5 years, because you have such a big potential. You are a guy who speaks 5 languages fluently. And you are here in front of me and you don't know what you should do with your life. And I am so sure that in 5 years' time, you'll be somewhere in the world and you will be amazing at whatever you're doing." And then he would suggest this idea, "Why don't you do a PhD in linguistics?" And back then, like, I wasn't even interested in linguistics at all. Hmm. That idea became a very interesting thing to do. And yeah, I applied for a PhD at Queen Mary University of London. And yeah, I started my PhD last year. And that's what I've been doing ever since.
Cool. Yeah, no. Well, yeah, thanks for that. And there's definitely lots you added there that wasn't in your initial story. So that's great to hear. Cool. It's almost like, did your therapist predict the future, or did he plant a seed which subconsciously grew and now you kind of followed that path?
I know. It is so uncanny. It is so uncanny. And I like to think, I don't believe in predicting futures. Mm. I do believe, though, that we're constantly producing meaning out of our experiences. And he probably seeded an idea in my head. He probably did. Because he was always like, he would always say, I'm amazed by your drive. You know, whatever you do with passion, there's a drive in you that you have to use for whatever you like to do. And I suppose that's just like what I did. It's, helping people. That's what I like to do. And if there's a lack of research about OCD, well, maybe I can fill that lack with my knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah, no, good point. And on that note, tell us about your research and. Well, yeah, we know why you're doing it now, but we know your motivation behind doing research on OCD, but tell us about the research and I guess what you hope to achieve with it or predict.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so basically my research is about how people who experience or have experienced OCD in relation to their sexual identity, gender identity, and romantic relationships use language in an online forum that I set up. So I literally spent a full year to get ethics approval to open an online forum. And, you know, I like the ethics committee. I don't even know if I should say this, but like, let's say that they had a hard time understand what my research was about.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I had to mention the types of intrusive thoughts that would, that could potentially appear in the forum. So when I mentioned that some of the intrusive thoughts was about pedophilia, it, like they literally thought that I was going to look at people who had sexual desires for children. And, you know, just imagine me going to the first meeting, very self-confident, like, okay, so I'm going to get approval right now. And then they're like, well, we're not sure about your project of looking at pedophiles. I'm like, that's not what I'm doing. You're completely misunderstanding my project. So I had to write to three OCD specialists, including my therapist, for a for their, you know, support. So they wrote letters, and then eventually the ethics committee accepted it. So yeah, and why I'm doing that research basically is because, well, first of all, there is a huge misunderstanding of what the type of OCD that we call pure O is. And even there's an even greater misunderstanding about the types of OCDs that touch on sexuality, gender, and relationships. Usually when people talk about sexual orientation OCD, many think that it has to do with internalized homophobia, with like a diagnostic label to promote reparative therapy, which is the kinds of therapies that religious fundamentalists use to cure homosexuality, quote unquote, which is very problematic, obviously. So I was like, okay, well, I need to do something against that. And the best way to do this is to look at how people who experience these intrusive thoughts talk about it. Right? It's not by looking at how people who don't have it will talk about this condition. It's really the people themselves who can shed some light on it. And then the other thing that I found very interesting is that there is a little bit of research on sexual orientation OCD, a little bit less on relationship OCD, and only three short reports on gender, what I call gender identity OCD. And these studies have only been done on heterosexual people, which means that there is no research at all on LGBTQ plus sufferers of OCD. And I think that the assumption that, let's say, somebody who is gay and is obsessing it about being heterosexual is just the opposite of a straight person obsessing about being gay, is a bit misleading, because LGBT sufferers, they already had to do a coming out. So they already had to go through a process of establishing their identity. So if they then have the OCD that makes them doubt that choice, I think it's different. I mean, there's different stuff going on.
I get what you're getting at. Yeah.
That is then another reason why I thought it would be interesting to actually look for LGBTQ plus sufferers and see what they have to say about this whole thing. And yeah, there are some people online who identify as LGBT. But yeah, right now I don't have any in my forum. So if there are some LGBTQ plus people who suffer from the types of OCDs that I'm interested in, who are listening to us right now, please come to the forum and tell your story, because that would be so valuable.
Excellent. No, yeah. So, well, yeah, I'll put the link in the show notes for everyone listening, and they can go check out that forum. Yeah, there's some things that you feel that you almost want to get out of it. You know, that I don't, because obviously you can't necessarily, obviously a lot of scientists do. It's, I mean, it's a myth that they say they're unbiased. They obviously have a lot of bias usually going into research. Yeah.
Always. Even the people who use quantitative methods, there is always a bias.
Oh, yeah.
Always.
You don't research something if you don't want to find something out. But, is there any predictions you have that you feel could positively impact OCD or OCD treatment or how the media and society sees OCD, anything like that?
I thought about, how could my research be useful for therapists? And I'm not sure yet how it could be useful. Mm. I really have to analyze first the data and how they use language, and maybe I could find something. I don't know.
Yeah.
However, the research itself does raise awareness about it. Like every time that I present my work in conferences, people are surprised that there is actually such a thing called sexual orientation OCD, relationship OCD, and so forth. And even some therapists, I have met therapists who say, oh yeah, I know about OCD. And then when I tell what I'm doing, they're like, but is this OCD? You know, so I mean, and there are studies that have shown that, there is a study that provided to, I think, 360 therapists, four different vignettes of OCD symptoms. And the one about homosexual obsessions was 77% of the times misdiagnosed as a sexual identity crisis. Mm. I mean, that's a lot.
What year was this?
I think it was in 2013.
Okay. And were all the people clinical psychologists or OCD specialists?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And they did CBT. I can send you the link.
Yeah, it'd be good. It'd be interesting to see that, because I'm always wary of those figures, because obviously there are many people that aren't true specialists. That makes sense, because most OCD specialists that spend their day jobs with OCD understand, as Reed Wilson said in this podcast, that the theme is rubbish. It's all OCD, and they spot those patterns, even if they've, I come into the therapist's office and I'm looking around for something, and I'm afraid of wallets. I have a fear that wallets are going to kill me. Now, I've never heard that worry in my life.
Right.
But an OCD suspicious would be like, there's an irrational fear, and then they're checking, or they're washing, or this is OCD. They don't need to understand that there's a million others with fear of wallets attacking them. You know what I mean? So when I see that data, I'm always wary. It's still a worrying fact, because there are trained professionals who aren't fully specialized that don't.
I can't remember, but I think that they might not have been OCD specialists, okay, though.
But just CBT,
Yeah.
I always emphasize, try and get people who work with people with OCD, because when you do, then there's a good chance they're going to understand.
Exactly. Yeah.
Cool.
So I think, my study could potentially raise awareness about these OCDs. And also, like, every time that there is something in the media going on, like, I'm really ready to react on it from a more academic point of view.
Excellent.
So I'm waiting for Rose's adaptation of her book, Pure, to come out on television next January, I think it is, so that I can write a little response to it.
And jump on any negative articles. I'm sure there. Hopefully there won't be. So you've mentioned about people who within the LBG. Count me out here, LBG.
LGBTQ.
That's it. Yeah, it's been a long, long day. community who have OCD to share that. And what other people would you like in that forum?
I mean, basically, like, the requirements to participate are the following. So people have to be at least 18 years old. They need to experience the intrusive thoughts that I'm interested in, that is, intrusive thoughts about sexuality, gender, and relationships. Mm. Or they might have experienced them in the past and now they're completely OCD free. That's completely fine, because it's also very important to know the stories of those people. They can be from any sexual orientation, ethnic background, religious background, whatever. So it's really large. I tried to make it as large as possible.
Yeah.
And I'm planning actually to keep the forum open afterwards. So cool. Maybe not the platform that I created, because the ethics committee, they were worried with that, because there will be no moderator in that forum anymore. Mm. But I'm happy to build the same forum on another platform, so that people, you know, can still have contact to each other and so forth.
Cool. All right, brilliant. So I mean, I saw on your, I don't know if it was Instagram or something, maybe today or another day, that you said you'd had a certain amount of people in the forum already, and a percentage of those are active. So of those that are already kind of sharing, what is there anything that's you're learning, or anything that you're instantly kind of noticing from the data?
I am actually surprised that many of them received the diagnosis of OCD. I was expecting to have more people who didn't have a diagnosis.
Yeah.
But now the question is, because most of these people are people who contacted me during the last 3 years, and then I sent them an invitation to participate. So maybe that's why that most of them, they already have a diagnosis. The other thing also is, many of them have a history of going to therapists who were not informed about OCD.
Yeah.
And some of the stories are just mind-blowing. Like, I'm just reading this the story of this person who had a psychic. And the psychic was trying to convince him that he was actually gay and that he was repressing his homosexuality and so forth, and that was, you know, causing more anxiety.
Yeah.
And it's really, I'm just amazed, you know, by the lack of misunderstanding that there is.
Yeah. Clearly don't listen to this podcast.
Yeah. But then also at the same time, and this is something that I've been noticing, because I'm going to a few conferences about OCD here in the UK.
Yeah.
And I'm also going, well, to your meetups cool. that you organize in London.
Good plug. Thank you.
And they are amazing. Like, whoever's listening to this, go to Stu's meetups. They are amazing. And one of the things that I find so beautiful is, the people that I meet who have OCD have the most horrible thoughts in their minds, and yet they are the most loving people that I've ever met.
Yeah.
I think it was in October, we had a picnic in Hyde Park, and just seeing those people with their families, their kids, having a nice time with each other, giving support to each other, it was such a nice moment. And yet there are so many people out there who are experiencing intrusive thoughts, who are experiencing anxiety and don't know what it is. Mm. And that is just so heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Which shows that, you know, that there is still a lot of work to do in terms of raising awareness about OCD.
Absolutely. Yeah. I couldn't agree more. Most people I meet with OCD are generally extremely nice people. And I think that's partly why, I don't say why they have OCD, but OCD wants to make you feel guilty. It wants to put hyper responsibility on you and all this. And sometimes, you know, nicer people are going to fall prey to that. It's kind of my prediction. I have no data to that. And or the other hypothesis I have is that because they've suffered, they've learned to kind of be nicer, you know, because they don't want other people to go through what they've gone through. Okay, so you presented at the University of Essex about the 11 misunderstandings of homosexual themed OCD or sexual orientation OCD. What are some of those 11 misunderstandings, and why are they incorrect?
So basically what I did is I went online and I tried to find as many articles about what they call homosexual OCD, a term that I find problematic because it excludes LGBTQ sufferers and also implies a certain homophobic stance That's that true. We are trying to get rid of, right? Because you're problematizing homosexuality. Yeah. And what I did is I analyzed those articles for the misunderstandings that they were having about that type of OCD. And I came with 11 misunderstandings. Now, I'm not going to I'm not going to tell like how is each misunderstanding you know, false, but I am going to tell you what they are. So one, that there is no peer review studies that support HOCD. Two, that HOCD is absent from mental health manuals, which isn't true. I mean, the term HOCD is indeed absent, for instance, in the DSM-5. So you will not find that term in the DSM-5. However, in the OCD chapter, they mention sexual intrusive thoughts.
Yeah.
Now, something that I find very interesting is that they don't mention intrusive thoughts related to homosexuality. However, on page 700 in the DSM-5, in the chapter about paraphilic disorders, excuse me, you will find a diagnostic differential where they say that people with OCD can experience sexual intrusive thoughts about homosexuality. Now, I think personally that this information would be also really helpful to have in the OCD chapter and not only in the paraphilic disorders.
You think
chapter.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Then the third myth or misunderstanding is that HOCD doesn't exist at all, but is only an invented, ridiculous disorder by religious fundamentalists. The fourth one is that HOCD only affects heterosexual men, which obviously isn't true. The fifth one is that HOCD is a diagnostic label to promote reparative therapy, as I said before.
Oh, yeah.
The sixth one is HOCD is a repathologization of homosexuality. And just a little notice on that, it is really interesting that in the 1920s, there has been a diagnostic label called acute homosexual panic that a psychologist, I think it was Kempf, and people started to call it back then the Kempf disease. And he described intrusive thoughts about homosexuality related to psychotic disorders, where people were having hallucinations of homosexual acts and so forth. And then later in the 50s and 60s, when homosexuality was still seen as a mental disorder, there was research carried on by Bieber and
Justin.
No, it's not Justin.
Sorry.
Good one. And obviously that research was very homophobic because he was trying to cure homosexuality. But one of the diagnostic labels that they had was pseudo-homosexual anxiety. And how they described it is uncannily similar to how sexual orientation OCD is described today. So maybe, and this is really a huge hypothesis that I'm establishing here, it is clear that anxieties about homosexuality have been around in society for many, many centuries. And maybe back then in the 50s and 60s, what therapists would have called pseudo-homosexual anxiety was maybe OCD. Because they say that the people who had this, they never had any homosexual experiences. They were having these thoughts all the time. They couldn't turn them off, and they were causing a lot of anxiety. But again, I mean, that's just an hypothesis. I'm not here to say
it does sound a lot, yeah.
That is true or not. It's just, you know, yeah. It could be. The seventh misunderstanding is that HOCD is a product of homophobia. It depends on how you understand homophobia. If you understand homophobia as a hatred towards gay people, that is not true, because many people who have sexual orientation OCD, they say, I have gay friends, I have gay family members, yeah. I support gay rights, but I still have this fear. However, if you consider homophobia in its literal meaning, that is a fear about homosexuality, I mean, yeah, it could be true to a certain extent, right? Because you're afraid of a possible homosexual desire. But yeah, I need to do more research on that point. And hopefully that will somehow be published in an article in 1 or 2 years. Then the eighth misunderstanding is that homosexual OCD is internalized homophobia, which isn't true. I mean, there's literature that establishes how internalized homophobia can be diagnosed. And then the ninth misunderstanding is that HOCD sufferers are homophobic, where, again, I said it before, it's not true. Yeah. The tenth misunderstanding is that HOCD is a sexual identity crisis and sufferers should try to figure it out with experiencing with same-sex people. And last one is that those sufferers are actually bisexual. I still have to do a lot of research about these misunderstandings and debunk them.
Yeah.
And I really hope that my forum, the data that I get from my forum, will help me to actually show that a lot of these don't make sense.
Well, absolutely. And I think that's really important. The more evidence you can find, I mean, to me, that will make sense what you said, and they're all misunderstandings. But it's about getting data. So to prove the people that don't have any understanding of OCD, you can say, well, you're wrong because here's these studies which show you're wrong. And then that way the press will get their facts straight and all this, because hopefully they will look at the research. That's a vital thing.
Yeah. And, you know, like every time that I present about my research at conferences, I'm always expecting somebody from the LGBT community raising their hand and saying, oh, but you're being homophobic, blah, blah, blah. And I mean, I completely get where they're coming from. I mean, you know, non-heterosexuality were pathologized, so it's obvious that people react in a very sensitive way. And that's also why I really expect, not expect, but I hope to get people from the LGBT community and who have OCD to come out and tell their stories on my forum, because it's only with their stories that I can show that, you know, to the world that sexual orientation OCD also affects the LGBT community.
Yeah, and it's not actually about sexuality, it's about OCD.
Exactly. Yeah. And also something that I'm exploring in my studies is that, like, how do social ideas about sexuality, gender, and love influence the OCD? Because I really have the feeling that the OCD is about a fear of not aligning with certain norms. So if somebody, if a heterosexual man is having doubts about being gay, I mean, you know, in terms of OCD, then it's very often in terms of, I'm not manly enough. What does it mean to be a man? Oh, maybe I'm a bit effeminate. So if I'm effeminate, that means that I'm gay. So it's really a fear of losing identity, of not aligning oneself with the social norms that we have about sexuality, gender, and love that creates those anxieties, which then, I mean, that ties in with the idea that pure O is about taboos, unacceptable thoughts, forbidden thoughts, and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, I'm intrigued to see how it all pans out for you. And thank you for going over those 11 misunderstandings, because I thought it was worth sharing. General question then, so kind of away from everything you've been doing, just advice for people generally with OCD. Real generic question, but words of hope maybe is a better way of saying it.
Yeah.
Hope or wisdom.
Usually people, when they hear about my story or my research, or they read or hear about people's recoveries and that kind of thing, they often say, "Oh, that gives me hope that I could become, that I can get out of OCD." And I usually tell them, like, don't hope, because if you're hoping, you're still engaging yourself with possibilities. You know, and if you're over-investing yourself in possibilities, it might be that you're still obsessing about it. So instead of hoping, have the courage to face the OCD. Mm. That is, have the courage to accept the possibility of whatever the OCD is telling you. And also have the courage to talk to people about it. Because most of the times, people are very welcoming, actually. I heard from many people who had the courage to come out as having OCD, and they said that their friends and families, they were very supporting. I actually never heard somebody, I mean, there must be, but I never heard a case where they got completely rejected.
I mean, yeah, it will differ across cultures, right?
Because of course,
in some cultures, mental health or illness is still extremely taboo. Although it's changing all the time, but yeah, it's generally speaking, in England, America, Canada, mainland Europe, it's fairly acceptable.
Yeah, so. and yeah, so have courage to talk to people, to go to therapy. If you read something about OCD and you're still not sure if you have OCD, just go to an OCD specialist. I mean, what you might lose is money. But I mean, what is it better? Is it better to spend months and even years suffering with the doubt whether it's OCD or not, or just go, you know, since the very beginning to a therapist who has the tools to treat you? Mm. And whatever you read online about those websites telling you to cure HOCD, don't fall for that shit. Like online therapies of these kinds, I'm very skeptical.
Yeah,
I prefer to go to a therapist who has like his personal webpage. Okay.
Yeah.
And he actually has some evidence that he treated OCD. And also, if a therapist says, "Oh yeah, I've treated a lot of HOCD cases," I'm like, a well-informed therapist will just say OCD. Hmm. He will not specify, like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
only HOCD. Like, because it seems to me that they are profiting out of people's anxieties, and they're like, "Listen, we have therapists who treat HOCD, come to us, we have all the tools." And then at the end of the day, it doesn't work. And here in the UK, there is this guy whose website is a bit problematic. if you want to treat HOCD, it's just OCD, go for an OCD specialist and you'll be fine.
Yeah, good point. And yeah, I always use the word OCD specialist as well, but I think it's also worth clarifying what we mean by that, which is a qualified registered therapist, obviously in CBT. And in most countries have a governing body for CBT, which is a good place to look. In America, they usually have had BTTI training, or they've trained at a specialist OCD clinic. In the UK, there's the BABCP. You can find qualified CBT therapists there. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah, an OCD specialist who is a qualified CBT therapist it is the kind of go-to. And yeah, there are more and more people sadly popping up, as you say, saying they can cure all these things, like and they just don't have the training or qualifications, and and they're not held to strict ethical guidelines like an actual therapist is, which is the worrying thing. So yeah, do your research, and if you're concerned, just speak to one of the OCD charities, and they'll be able to point you in the direction of a right therapist.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you see a therapist and they list a dozen of specialties, like, oh, I treat OCD, schizophrenia,
depression, other anxiety, bipolar,
it's like, I mean, we are human beings. We cannot be specialists in so many areas. Like, it's
Paul
better
said
to have,
this, didn't he?
Yeah, it's better to have a person who is specialist in one or two domains and knows how to do that very well than to have somebody who claims to have a whole list of specialties.
Yeah, really, really good point, and well worth highlighting. Okay, so a question I wouldn't have asked you in episode 15, which is, what would you tell your 20-year-old self if you could pick up the phone and call him?
20-year-old?
Yeah.
Holy crap. Holy crap. Where was I with 20? Okay, so with 20, I finished high school and I went to university. I didn't know what to do with my life. I would just tell him, listen, Elvis, I'm your future you. And like, in a couple of years, you will go through a lot of shit. Just trust the people who tell you to go to therapy. And just... stop thinking about, you know, those gender and sexuality stereotypes that you might have learned from movies like American Pie. Mm. Because I loved American Pie movies.
Yeah, they're great.
I mean, but they're so problematic. So problematic. They're so sexist and homophobic. It's just incredible. yeah, I would probably try to rationalize a bit what would happen in a few years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
And and I would tell him to write on a panel, you know, shit. Just shit.
Why?
I don't know. I really don't know. And I don't even know why I just said that. It's just like the image that now I know. Didn't I say, like, the last time that we talked, I mean, for the episode, the last episode, you asked me a question and then I mentioned something about a billboard and writing shit on it?
I don't remember.
Okay, maybe I'm just making things up.
Well, I mean, I haven't listened to that episode in like 2 years, so yeah, potentially, but we'll leave it there.
Embarrassing.
On that note, though, so my next question was, you've got a billboard. This time, not in Switzerland, it's in London. Other than shit, what do you want written on that billboard?
People, if you're walking, stop looking at your phones. Mm. Oh my God, I hate this. I hate this. And it's incredible how many people in London do this.
Yeah. It's really bad.
So, yeah, if you're walking, just look ahead.
And they're slowly, like, veering towards you, and they don't see you coming, and then you have to swerve.
And sometimes I don't do this on purpose, just to tell them, hey, look up.
They're probably reading one of my Instagram posts. okay, so... is there anything else that we haven't discussed or haven't asked you that you wish you could have shared today?
No, I don't think so. As I said, I mean, I'm really looking forward for people to participate in the forum. It went online 3 weeks ago, so it's still pretty young. That there are around 35 people who are registered. Around 10 of them are actively participating. You know, and yeah, it's like we need to raise awareness, and especially LGBTQ plus sufferers. I mean, we really, really need your stories, even more so than those from heterosexual people. No, I'm not denigrating them. It's just that we need a bit more awareness about LGBT people.
Yeah, no, I get it. And what I'll do is I'll put the links to your forum in the show notes, as well as everything else you've mentioned. Obviously, I wish you well with your research, and thank you again for coming on.
Thank you. Oh, and one last thing.
Yeah.
I have to say that you are doing such a great job.
Thank you.
With the podcast, with the meetups in London, and with the OCD camp. It is amazing. And I just want to congratulate you for that, because there are countries where there is nothing, you know, like that, podcast, an OCD community who supports each other. So I'm really amazed by how the UK has these, how can I call them? Things to support people who suffer from OCD, and you're part of it, and it's just amazing. So well done.
No, thank you, Ben. That means a lot. I appreciate it. So there you have it. I hope you enjoyed my chat with Alvis. And if you haven't listened to my first chat with him, it was episode 15, so many, many moons ago, please go check that out. You may enjoy it. And if you get a moment, please do leave us a review on any podcast app you listen to this on. I deeply appreciate it. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It's not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. And until we speak, take care, guys.